Welcome back to Current State. I'm Reginald Hardwick, WKAR Digital News Director, with your roundup of news from across Michigan and the Great Lakes. With some help from Boys to Men, we're going to talk weather for a little bit. If you love that mild autumn we've enjoyed, your luck is about to run out. National Weather Service meteorologist Yanis Lawrence tells us mid-Michigan is about to flip the switch to winter.
There are very big changes on the way next week. We're looking for an Arctic cold front to come through. It looks like that'll be coming through late Tuesday night. And then after that, looks like temperatures are going to plummet for mid to late next week. By Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday in the Lansing area, we're looking for high temperatures of only reaching the upper 20s to lower 30s, with low temperatures mainly in the 20s. With this type of an Arctic air mass coming across relatively warm lake waters, we're also looking at a setup for lake effect snow showers. In terms of accumulations, it's kind of hard to pinpoint that far out in time. It looks like most of the heavier lake effect snow, as oftentimes happens, would be closer to Lake Michigan, especially near to west of 131. But I think on days that are, especially those days that are windier, I think that those snow showers will definitely carry farther inland, and Lansing should see some light snow accumulations out of that as well, mid to late next week.
Well, speaking of winter, the Michigan Department of Transportation is gearing up. Preparations include getting snowplows ready to hit the roads and highways of our state. And keeping roadways as clear as possible is crucial, but so is the safety of all drivers. This year, there's an important new safety feature, as WKER Scott Pohl tells us.
Because of a new state law passed in 2016, the state and many county road commissions are installing green flashers on snowplows. At the Michigan Department of Transportation Grand Ledge Garage on North Canal Road, Engineer of Operations Field Services Mark Geib explains.
We're doing this change because green and yellow are the two colors in the light spectrum that are the most visible to the human eye, and so it is going to be increasing the safety of our operations.
Making snowplows easier to see will hopefully avoid accidents. Maintenance supervisor Ben Hodges can't come up with a single horror story of a motorist passing one of these rigs because it happens all the time. His advice, don't crowd the plow.
These large winter maintenance vehicles are sometimes equipped with tow plows and wing plows, along with front plows. So some of them are very large and sometimes can be very unpredictable if a motorist is too close. You never know when one of these trucks are going to deploy a wing plow or a tow plow or material. So we really, really are adamantly trying to tell everybody to be very careful and alert when approaching our winter maintenance vehicles.
You know snowplows are big, right? But how big are they? Again, Ben Hodges.
Fully loaded with salt, they're between 50 and 60,000 pounds, this specific vehicle, a tandem axle, your average snowplow truck. Some of ours are larger and some of them are smaller depending on the route that they're assigned to. Our tow plow is, I would say about 75 feet long. Somewhere along those lines, and that carries roughly about 24 tons of salt. That's just salt, so you're looking at a vehicle that weighs approximately 90,000 pounds, and that specific vehicle can plow two lanes of road if need be.
And it isn't just that snow plows are big, it's also how many of them are out there. Engineer Mark Geib says there are hundreds around Michigan.
Michigan Department of Transportation has about 300 snow plows, and then our county and city partners have an additional over 1,000. And they do a lot of the maintenance work, about three quarters of it for us statewide.
Expect to see these biggest plows, the tow plows, on Michigan roadways with greater frequency this winter. Ben Hodges says they're capable of clearing more road, but that means they need more room.
The tow plows we've been using for the last couple of years out of this garage are very beneficial because one operator in certain situations can plow two lanes, one shoulder, and another partial shoulder within one pass. Minimizes the amount of impact that we have on traffic. We don't have that many vehicles out on the road at the same time, and essentially makes the road safer for the motoring public.
The state is betting that flashing green lights and bigger plows on Michigan roads this winter will mean faster clearing and greater safety, as long as motorists give them the space and the time they need to do the job. Scott Pohl, WKAR News.
To see photos and a video of the updated snow plows, go to WKAR.org.
I'm Russ White, reporting for WKAR. Bert Craig is an associate professor of horticulture and forestry at MSU, and he's an expert on real Michigan Christmas trees. Craig says the tap and pull tests are ways to make sure you're getting a fresh tree.
Yeah, so the thing you want to look for when you're selecting the tree is, first of all, get a tree that's fresh. And how do you tell that? Well, it depends. If you go to a choose and cut lot, that's pretty obvious because obviously the tree was growing until you got it. If you go to a tree lot, a wholesale or excuse me, a retail or a big box store, things to look for are I do the tap test. So if you can pick the tree up and actually tap it, if you're on a you know a parking lot or something like that, tap it on the butt end of the tree on the blacktop, and you shouldn't see a lot of needles coming off of it. The other thing is what we call the pull test. So just grab, the ends of one of the branches between your thumb and your forefinger there and just give it a gentle pull along, and you shouldn't have any needles coming off in your hands. If you do, then keep looking. But a well-hydrated tree should keep, and you shouldn't have any issues with it.
Keeping your tree well-hydrated with just water is the key to keeping it fresh throughout the holidays.
So what we talk about is fresh tree, fresh cut, fresh water. And so once you have the tree home, if it's a choose and cut and you've brought it home and you can get it up right away, you're good to go. If it's from a lot or if you've done a choose and cut and you have to keep it around, you know, for a couple days so you can get it up in the house, what we recommend is that you take about the butt end, about a half inch to three quarter inch cut off that cut end, because what will happen is as the tree sits, you'll have some resin begin to fill and plug those pores where the tree's going to take up water through that butt end. So that fresh cut right before you stick it in your stand is important. And then fresh water, there's no need for aspirin, 7-Up, heard different things, flower preservative, any of that. Really, the best thing to do is just keep fresh water to it. And one thing people don't often realize is how much water a tree can go through, especially when you first bring it in the house. If you have a fresh tree and you bring it into a warm house, you can hear that, you know, Ross Perot, the giant sucking sound of the water going up the tree. And so check it daily. If it's a large tree, maybe even a couple times a day, those first few days especially. But I'd say for the first week or two, check it daily.
It's important to properly dispose of your tree after the holidays too.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to make sure that trees don't end up in the landfill. Most communities now have some type of recycling program. I know City of East Lansing, I think you can just leave them on the curb and they come by and they pick them up. Other communities have drop-off sites. You can bring them in. I know City of East Lansing again has different drop-off sites at their parks. And most communities nowadays, if not in your town somewhere nearby, there should be a place where you can take that tree, and usually they get ground up and into mulch and reused that way. Some people will, if you're out in the country, some people put them out and they make nice habitat for birds and things like that. So lots you can do with it, just don't let it end up in the landfill.
That's MSU Christmas tree expert Bert Craig. For more, Google the Michigan Christmas Tree Association. I'm Russ White for WKAR.
Forests of the northern Great Lakes are important for business such as tourism, logging, and maple sugaring. But now they're under pressure from climate change. To adjust, landowners and the U.S. Forest Service are working to make the woods more resilient. Our reporting partners at Great Lakes Today help us keep you on top of environmental concerns in our region. Samantha Harrington takes us to northern Wisconsin to see how scientists are trying to save our forests.
Here in the Chequamegon-Nicolet National Forest, with a steady breeze rustling the leaves overhead, you can see what makes the forests of the Upper Midwest so special. They transition between southern trees like oak and white pine, and the northern trees like fir and spruce. But climate change is bringing more intense storms, as well as warmer winters, and that affects a forest in several ways.
You know, you're extending the growing season on one end, you're not getting that durable frost that freezes the ground that knocks back forest pests and diseases.
That's Stephen Handler, a climate science researcher with the Forest Service. He's here on a warm fall day to tell members of the Wisconsin Woodland Owners Association how they can protect their trees from climate change.
We're kind of like a climate change help desk, a climate change phone a friend for landowners and foresters and loggers all across the Midwest and Northeast.
To show the impact of climate change, he gives the landowners red and green ribbon and sends them into the woods. Trees projected to decrease in population, like sugar maple and balsam fir, get marked with red ribbon. Trees projected to increase, like bur and white oak, get a green ribbon.
What do you got on this one? Basswood?
So we need some green flagging here.
When they're done, red ribbons dominate the area, and many of the landowners are overwhelmed. But Handler says they can do a lot to help their forest thrive. He lists three options: resistance, resilience, and transition. Resistance means protecting valuable trees.
So imagine you have a 80-year-old red pine stand, right? Or maybe you are a national forest and you're required to maintain some kind of habitat for an endangered species, right? You're going to try to protect that red pine stand until its commercial end of life.
So landowners might thin out competing trees to make sure there's enough water and light. Resilience means making sure a forest has many types of trees, and they're not all the same age. And transition means favoring species that are likely to do well in a changing climate. The landowners are already seeing unusual weather patterns, like more intense storms. Steve Ehrenholtz recently inherited 40 acres and says some is much wetter than usual.
We even have an area that the ferns are growing really well. Those will be wet for a lot longer periods where they might have dried out in the past.
Mike Fauerbach owns 191 acres. Standing among the others, he says recent winters have not been good for logging machinery that requires hard, frozen ground.
Had a timber sale that's gone on for 3 years. The ground was not hard enough to allow for that. And if you tell a logger around us that the climate isn't changing, you would be laughed at.
Still, he's up for the challenge of climate change.
We had to prepare for it. So, you know, if you're in northern Wisconsin, you better figure out what you can do here because it's not going to go away.
Before the landowners leave, Handler has some important words of caution. He points out that computer models don't account for pests, like the emerald ash borer. So even though white ash are projected to do well in the climate models, they're not necessarily a safe bet. This is Samantha Harrington in Madison, Wisconsin, reporting for Great Lakes Today.
Thank you for listening to Current State here on WKAR. A national controversy came to light in the greater Lansing area earlier this fall when four African-American football players at Lansing Catholic High School chose to kneel during the national anthem. They joined NFL players and other high school student-athletes across the country in kneeling to shed light on racial inequality and police brutality issues. Two of the students transferred from Lansing Catholic after the football seasons for reasons beyond the controversy. They recently told WKAR they did not feel welcome at the school months before this fall's protests. With permission from their parents, Michael Lynn III and Matthew Abdullah talked with WKAR current sports host Al Martin last week. Lynn, who is both Black and Latino, says he went through racial taunting at Lansing Catholic, starting with cyberbullying by fellow teammates in the fall of 2016.
I'm coming back from, you know, games, and I'm putting my heart out on the field, and I'm coming back from games, and in the group chat I'm seeing, you know, build the wall, make America great again. I'm half Mexican and half Black, so and they know I'm in the group chat. So to have them saying that, and I ended up texting them saying, like, the stuff's not funny, just cut it out. You know, do it somewhere else. Cut it out. This isn't the place for that.
Lynn says the racial remarks and experiences continued well after the football season.
Being at Lansing Catholic, I dealt with, like I said, passive and aggressive. Passive stuff, like little comments, but very up in my face, build the wall. I'd sit and I'd be anxious. I'd sit in the parking lot and not know if I wanted to walk into the school. And when I say anxious, it not only made me anxious, but it made me, like, sad. It made me, you know, it just...
A lot of emotions, I'm sure. Yeah.
It was his idea to kneel during the playing of the national anthem during this year's football season. It was not a knee-jerk reaction to seeing NFL players doing the same thing. He explained his reasoning to the entire team in early October. But Lynn said his coach was not supportive.
When I say I talked for 30 straight minutes, I told them the things I've gone through growing up and why I felt like I needed to do this. And then he comes back and tells me, I just hope we're ready for Friday. And it kind of hit me like, either you don't understand or you don't want to understand what I'm telling you right now.
Fellow player Matthew Abdullah, who is also African-American, joined Lynn in kneeling and explaining to the entire team their thoughts.
There were some teammates that were like, yeah, we'll support you, but we just won't kneel. And at the end of the meeting, they just said, some will kneel, some will stand, but we'll all be united.
Starting with their October 6th game, Lynn, Abdullah, and two other black football players kneeled during the national anthem. Coaches punished them by not letting them start the game. And later, Coach Jim Ahern addressed the protest with the media after the game.
My own personal opinion is that they have the right to do it, but I think it divides more than it helps. You know, and I'm not talking about a team. I'm just talking about an NFL or wherever this is happening. I think it divides people more than it brings them together. I think there's better avenues to get that message out that they want to get out. And I agree with the message, but I don't think athletics is the place to try to use that as a platform.
Off the field, Abdullah and another student created a cultural diversity club for Lansing Catholic High School students. He shared that experience with current sports host Al Martin.
The club was set to just make it so people had a safe place to go and talk about what was going on in their life or at school and with like racial issues or even like cultural issues. Mm-hmm. And there was quite a few people in the morning and the afternoon. And then the next meetings we had more people even show up. And that really brightened my day.
But the one club was not enough for the two student athletes to feel like Lansing Catholic High School was home. Abdullah transferred to Holt High School, and Lynn will finish his senior year at Lansing Sexton.
You know, I didn't want to leave my team, so that's why when I said before the season I was wondering if I wanted to transfer,
right.
I couldn't. I didn't want to leave my team
exactly.
Because they'd done a lot for me, I'd done a lot for them. But after the football season, you know, I wasn't playing football. I was just a student. I couldn't be a student there. I didn't feel good as a student. I didn't feel good walking through the halls.
We reached out to Lansing Catholic High School principal Doug Moore for comments on the story. He said at this time, the school will not be making a formal statement. ''1989 was quite a year. The Berlin Wall fell. Students in China protested for democracy in Tiananmen Square. South Africa started to dismantle apartheid. Taylor Swift was born. And here in Michigan, the Detroit Pistons won their first NBA championship. Also in 1989, as many as 100 different school districts, including homeschool groups, began sending teams to compete on WKAR's Quiz Busters. But this fall will be the final run for the award-winning series. WKAR Morning Edition host Brooke Allen talked with the host of Quiz Busters about how he breaks the ice and gets the students to relax a little while answering all those tough questions.
The beloved WKAR Emmy Award-winning game show Quizbusters is in its final season. Matt Ottinger has been its host the entire 29 years, and if you're familiar with the show and Matt, you'll know this.
I always wear with my black suit, and it's always the same black suit, that's another thing, tennis shoes. I always have. Officially, the reason for that is because it's just kind of a fun, quirky thing, and it puts the students at ease. I'm not even sure if the audience is aware of this, but the students always know to expect to see me in my black suit and my tennis shoes.
And that black suit and those shoes, not the same pair the entire 29 years, Matt eagerly admitted off tape, have walked in front of hundreds of students. I had a chance to catch up with one of them after a live taping in October. Meet Austin Jones from Vandercook, who admits his appearance on Quizbusters was a bit unnerving.
and the inside felt like I was gonna throw up, but then I like was trying to hold it.
There's so many people throwing things at you.
I know, it was just all the lights and stuff. I was.
And his mom, Crystal, who didn't know what to expect when she sat in the live audience for the first time and really just wanted to cheer out loud.
It was actually more entertaining. I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was great. I was nervous we couldn't be quiet.
Being quiet is one of the rules if you are sitting in the live studio audience, which you'll have a chance to do next week during the final taping of the grand finale. So be in the TV studio audience as the Quizbusters division champions meet up in the series finale grand championship game. And after the game, join us for the series wrap party to celebrate the success of the show and Mid-Michigan's own amazing game show host, Matt Ottinger. The event is free, but reservations are required and tennis shoes are not. For details, go to WKAR.org. For WKAR News, I'm Brooke Allen.
Oh, 2017 marks the 100th anniversary of American involvement in World War I. A new exhibition at the MSU Museum reveals how the government promoted the war. It's called War and Speech, Propaganda and Patriotism in the Great War. WKAR Scott Paul visited the museum this week for a tour with history curator Shirley Vida, beginning with the first posters on display at the entry to the exhibit.
Patriotism was shown during World War I by a lot of different voluntary activities beyond the government propaganda of the division for pictorial publicity, which was the artist that George Creel recruited to make posters like the Uncle Sam I Want You poster. We also have in this exhibit posters that were made as part of contests for communities by high school students or by different philanthropic organizations. So for example, we have a poster entitled What is Your Alibi, which was done by, so far, an anonymous person. We only have his or her initials, M-A-S. Requiring more research. Research never ends. And this was done in Three Oaks, Berrien County, Michigan. It's wonderful to have such an artifact. They're pretty rare.
So the government actively tried to squash dissent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you read newspapers of the time, too, George Creel and his newspaper men on the Committee on Public Information insert in newspapers basic, you know, copy, you know, to keep the, you know, the government looking really, really wonderful. Censorship was voluntary. Newspaper editors tended to fall into accord with that. But censorship overseas was something different. If you were an American doughboy, an American soldier in the trenches, your letter would have to go through three censors in order to get back home.
We have moved into an area of the exhibit that has to do with race and with immigration as it relates to American involvement in the war. Tell me about that.
Well, we were fascinated when we looked at all the posters in our collection that rarely were African Americans depicted. In further study, I found that African Americans did appear on one or two government-produced posters. But for the most part, African Americans really appear on commercially produced lithographs promoting the war effort, and more importantly, promoting African Americans' patriotism and civic duty in the war. Many African Americans believed that fighting the war would help decrease discrimination, increase civic engagement, civic duty, and change the racism, change majority culture's racist views of African Americans. What we also have here, though, is the everyday racism that African American men saw when they actually registered for the draft. What we have in the exhibit is a facsimile military registration card for the great Detroit Tiger player, Ty Cobb. And in the corner, we could see what was everyday racism. It's a small triangle that had to be torn off if you were registering for the military draft and you were African American.
I assume that would simplify the sorting process to keep separate the registrations of whites from those of African Americans.
Definitely so.
Tell me about this uniform jacket that we are standing in front of.
The uniform jacket that we have is from the 2nd Division of the United States Army, the American Expeditionary Forces. And the 2nd Division is a unique division. It contained both Marines and Army personnel. But we were fascinated by the jacket for two reasons. First of all, the Sedition Act said you couldn't criticize military uniforms. Yet what we see on the patch designating the 2nd Division is an Indian head. Secondly, we were fascinated by Native Americans' participation in the military, in the war at this time, and how they were displayed and written about in newspapers. So we used the example of Sergeant Lee Shannonquette from Michigan, who was wounded severely. It took him 2 years to recover from his wounds. And he'd go back and fight again. But when a Detroit newspaper depicted him, they depicted him as an Indian brave, and they used the term boy instead of man. So we were fascinated by the use of that stereotype of Native Americans. Some Native Americans actually were citizens, some weren't. And in 1919, those who fought could apply for United States citizenship.
This thought-provoking exhibition is called War and Speech, Propaganda and Patriotism in the Great War. You can see it at the MSU Museum through November 11th of 2018. Shirley Vida is curator of history here at the MSU Museum. Thank you.
Thank you. This was fun.
For WKAR News, I'm Scott Pohl.
And that's it for this weekend's edition of Current State. WKAR station manager is Peter Worf. Susie Elkins is Director of Broadcasting and General Manager of WKAR Public Media. And I'm Reginald Hardwick, WKAR Digital News Director. Have a great weekend.
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? In the land, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight. We are happy tonight, walking in the winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in the winter wonderland. In no matter, we can build a snowman, can pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man.